Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present St. Bart's Episode 1, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 1, The Island Before Time. Long before the first whispers of human footsteps graced its rocky shores, St. Bart's existed as a silent sentinel in the vast Caribbean Sea, an unyielding fortress sculpted by the hands of time and the unrelenting embrace of the ocean. The island, no more than a rugged outcrop of volcanic rock, had been born of fire, thrust from the seabed in a violent eruption millions of years ago. In its infancy, it was a land of chaos, where rivers of molten rock clashed with the cooling sea, where the wind howled against jagged cliffs, and where nature, in her rawest form, shaped a place destined to become both a refuge and a battleground. In the epochs that followed, life found its way to this barren rock. The sea, ever the great giver, deposited rich nutrients along the coastline, coaxing the first resilient mangroves from the earth. Birds, carried by the trade winds, brought seeds from distant lands, and in time, a lush yet delicate ecosystem emerged. Though smaller and rockier than many of its neighboring isles, St. Bart's became a sanctuary for creatures adapted to its rugged terrain. Turtles nested upon its sun-bleached sands, iguanas roamed the sun-baked rocks, and frigate birds glided above, their forked tails slicing through the Caribbean sky. But St. Bart's remained isolated, untouched by human hands for millennia. It lay waiting, a forgotten jewel adrift in the cerulean vastness, while across the seas, empires rose and fell, civilizations flourished and collapsed, and the very notion of the world was being rewritten by explorers who had yet to dream of its existence. The first people, whispers of the Arawaks. The silence of St. Bart's was broken sometime around 300 to 400 AD when the first traces of humanity arrived. These were the Arawaks, a peaceful people of South American origin, expert navigators and cultivators who had followed the rhythms of the sea, searching for new lands to settle. Their dugout canoes, carved from the mighty ceiba tree, skimmed the waves, guided by constellations passed down through generations. When they first set foot on St. Bart's, the land was alien, harsher than the fertile riverbanks of their ancestors, yet abundant in its own right. The Arawaks were no mere wanderers. They were storytellers, artisans, and architects of community. They built small villages along the coastline, erecting thatched huts of woven palm fronds. Their circular designs a reflection of their harmonious way of life. They worked the land gently, cultivating cassava, maize, and sweet potatoes in carefully tended plots. Their hands molded clay into intricate pottery, their designs whispering the stories of their people, their myths, their gods, their connection to the land and sea. Life on St. Bart's was one of rhythm and ritual. At dawn, fishermen paddled into the shallows, casting hand-woven nets into the crystal-clear waters, drawing forth snapper, grouper, and parrotfish. Women ground cassava into flour, their voices rising in song, blending with the ever-present roar of the waves. At night, under skies untouched by the pollution of modern light, elders gathered around flickering fires, recounting tales of spirits that moved with the tides and gods who commanded the storms. For centuries, the Arawaks lived in relative peace, their world untouched by the violence that would one day come. They honored the earth, the sea, and the spirits within them. Yet, their time on St. Bart's was not destined to last. The Carib invasion, a clash of worlds. The first shadows of change arrived on the horizon not in the form of foreign sails, but in the swift, silent approach of war canoes. Longer, sleeker, faster than any the Arawaks had ever seen. The Caribs, fierce warriors of the Lesser Antilles, descended upon St. Bart's like a tempest. Unlike the Arawaks, the Caribs were not a people of quiet cultivation but of conquest, their societies built on the spoils of war. The Arawaks fought, but they were no match for the battle-hardened Caribs, who wielded clubs and poisoned arrows with deadly precision. One by one, villages fell. Smoke curled into the sky as the Caribs raised settlements, taking prisoners to be either enslaved or consumed in brutal ritual cannibalism, a practice that struck terror into the hearts of all who opposed them. The once thriving Arawak presence on St. Bart's was extinguished. Those who survived fled, their canoes cutting through the surf in desperate escape, leaving behind the echoes of a vanished people. The Caribs, now the undisputed rulers of the island, left little trace of their own settlements. They used St. Bart's not as a place of permanence, but as a strategic waypoint, a hunting ground, a refuge, a battlefield in their ongoing resistance against the inevitable wave of foreign invaders who loomed just beyond the horizon. The Age of Silence, between conquest and discovery. For the Caribs, St. Bart's was but a fragment of a larger domain, a stepping stone in their dominion over the Lesser Antilles. The island remained uninhabited for long stretches of time, used only as a place of temporary shelter or a base for launching raids on other islands. The Caribs, in their strength and pride, believed they were the final masters of these lands. They could not have known that a far greater storm was coming. Beyond the horizon, across an ocean that seemed infinite, a world of steel and sail, of muskets and greed, was stirring. The European empires, Spain, France, England, and the Netherlands, had begun their voracious expansion across the Atlantic. The age of exploration was dawning, and no island, no matter how small or rocky, would be spared from the grip of conquest. For now, however, St. Bart's remained an island in waiting, its beaches caressed by the waves, its cliffs standing firm against the tempests. The cries of war had faded, the embers of Arawak fires long since cold, but the echoes of history lingered in the wind. The island was silent once more, but not for long. Beyond the horizon, sails were coming. The dawn of a new chapter. St. Bart's, a mere speck in the Caribbean, had already seen the rise and fall of civilizations before the first European eyes ever glimpsed its shores. It had been a land of peace, then a land of war, and now, it stood at the precipice of an era that would redefine its fate. The Arawaks and Caribs had left their mark, but what was to come would be unlike anything the island had ever witnessed. As the tides lapped against its shores, as the wind carried whispers of forgotten battles, as the land waited in silence, St. Bart's was about to be thrust into the currents of global history. The world was coming, and it would never be the same again. Chapter 2. The Arrival of the Europeans, 1493-1600s. The morning light shimmered upon the restless sea, turning the horizon into a gilded ribbon of fire and foam. The wind, a ceaseless wanderer, carried with it the scent of salt and the whisper of destiny. For centuries, St. Bart's had known only the rhythm of the tides, the silent sentinels of its rocky cliffs standing watch over a land untouched by the ambitions of foreign empires. But that silence was about to be broken. Beyond the horizon, massive vessels creaked under the weight of canvas sails, their wooden hulls groaning as they cut through the waves like great beasts of war. On board, weathered men, clad in linen and leather, clutched rusted blades and primitive firearms, their eyes set upon the unknown. They were explorers, conquerors, seekers of fortune and glory, men who carried the fate of entire civilizations upon their shoulders. And at the helm of one such ship, a man whose name would be forever etched into the pages of history stood with an unwavering gaze. Christopher Columbus. The first glimpse of St. Bart's, 1493. It was November 1493, during Columbus's second voyage to the New World, when the island of St. Bart's first found its way into European records. As the towering Spanish caravels skimmed across the cerulean waters, their sails bloated by the trade winds, they passed by a scattering of islands, each one a new mystery, each one an untouched jewel in the crown of the unknown. The fleet had already stopped at Dominica and Guadeloupe, where they had encountered the fierce Carib warriors, whose resistance had made it abundantly clear that the lands they were entering were not unclaimed, nor were they unguarded. And then, as the fleet drifted further northwest, an island of rugged cliffs and golden beaches came into view. It was small, insignificant in comparison to the larger islands nearby. It had no towering peaks, no vast rivers, no lush jungles bursting with the promise of gold. To Columbus and his men, it was just another island, one among the many that had begun to blur together in their relentless pursuit of conquest. Still, Columbus marked it on his maps, giving it a name that held deep personal significance, San Bartolomé, after his younger brother, Bartholomew Columbus. And with that simple act, the island of St. Bart's entered European consciousness. But Columbus did not land. He had greater ambitions, greater riches to chase, and St. Bart's, in its isolation and barrenness, held nothing of immediate value to him. The fleet moved on, its sails vanishing into the horizon, leaving the island untouched for now. A century of indifference, 1500s. In the years that followed Columbus's fleeting recognition of St. Bart's, Spain turned its attention elsewhere. The vast riches of the Americas, gold, silver, and land ripe for the taking, lay in places like Mexico, Peru, and the larger Caribbean islands of Hispaniola and Cuba. St. Bart's, a rocky outcrop with little arable land and no signs of treasure, remained untouched, an afterthought in the grand scheme of imperial conquest. Yet the currents of history were shifting. The Caribbean was no longer an uncharted world, and with each passing year, more ships ventured into its waters. Spain, the dominant force of the 16th century, soon found itself challenged by new players, France, England, and the Netherlands, each vying for a piece of the riches that lay within the West Indies. St. Bart's, though still largely ignored, did not remain entirely unnoticed. For over a century after Columbus's sighting, it became a waypoint for passing ships, a place where European sailors could anchor for the night, replenish their freshwater supplies, and take shelter from storms. But they did not stay. The island was wild and hospitable, and home to the remnants of Carib resistance. The few ships that attempted to establish footholds found themselves at odds with the island's defenders, who knew the terrain far better than any foreign invader. For now, St. Bart's remained on the fringes of empire, a nameless dot in the grand chessboard of colonial ambition. But the winds of fate were restless, and soon, those who had once passed it by would return, not as mere travelers, but as conquerors. The first European settlers, the French, arrive, 1620-1648. By the early 1600s, France had begun its expansion into the Caribbean, staking claims on islands like Guadeloupe and Martinique. Driven by the ambitions of the Compagnie des Isles de l'Amérique, French colonists, primarily from Normandy and Brittany, set sail in search of new lands to cultivate. And among those seeking their fortunes, a few set their sights on St. Bart's. The first recorded attempt at colonization came in 1623, when a small band of French settlers landed on the island, hoping to carve out a new life. They built rudimentary shelters along the coastline, planting cassava and sugarcane in the sparse soil. But St. Bart's was an unforgiving land. Unlike its fertile neighbors, the island lacked the rich volcanic earth needed for large-scale plantations. Freshwater was scarce, and hurricanes, those great tempests of the Caribbean, ravaged their fragile settlements. Worse still, the Caribs, though reduced in numbers, had not forgotten the intruders who had begun to claim their lands. Attacks on the settlers were swift and brutal, their villages burned, their people slaughtered or taken as captives. By 1627, the first French settlers abandoned St. Bart's, their dreams of colonization reduced to ashes. The island returned to its quiet solitude, waiting once more for the next wave of ambition to wash upon its shores. The struggle for control, 1648-1666. Despite its hardships, St. Bart's remained a desirable foothold in the ever-growing battle for Caribbean dominance. The mid-1600s saw a renewed struggle between France, Spain, and the Dutch, with smaller islands constantly changing hands as European powers fought for control. In 1648, the French once again attempted to stake their claim, sending settlers under the command of Philippe de Longvilliers de Poincy, a powerful figure in the Order of St. John and the governor of the French Caribbean colonies. This time, the colonization efforts were more structured, with military backing and a clear strategic goal: to establish St. Bart's as a supply and defense point in France's growing empire. Yet, even under French control, the island was never a primary focus. While other colonies thrived on sugarcane and slave labor, St. Bart's remained an outlier, its economy driven by small-scale fishing, salt production, and subsistence farming. The settlers, a hardy and determined lot, endured hurricanes, droughts, and isolation. By the late 1660s, St. Bart's was officially part of the French Caribbean holdings, but its significance remained minor. Unlike Guadeloupe or Martinique, which flourished with wealth and commerce, St. Bart's remained a rugged frontier, a land of survival rather than prosperity. And yet, the very qualities that made it unsuitable for large-scale colonization would, in time, make it something else entirely: a refuge, a hideout, a sanctuary for those who thrived in the shadows of empire. For just beyond the horizon, in the lawless waters of the Caribbean, a new force was rising. The Buccaneers were coming, and street Barts would never be the same again. Chapter 3. The Era of Buccaneers and Pirates, 1600s–1700s. The Caribbean in the 17th century was no longer just a scattering of remote islands lost to the vastness of the ocean. It had become a chessboard of empires, a place where European nations battled for control over trade routes, resources, and the riches of the New World. But where there was war, there was also chaos. And where there was chaos, there was opportunity. Beyond the reach of kings and laws, in the lawless waters of the Caribbean, a new breed of men emerged, fierce, cunning, and bound by no allegiance but to themselves. They were called many names, privateers, corsairs, freebooters. But the world would remember them as buccaneers and pirates. And in the shadows of the colonial struggle, St. Barts, small, unremarkable, and overlooked by the great empires, became a secret haven for these men of fortune. A sanctuary in the shadows. To the untrained eye, St. Barts was nothing more than a rugged, inhospitable island, its rocky coastline battered by the relentless waves, its land offering little in the way of wealth or sustenance. But to those who lived by the sword and sailed under the black flag, this seemingly insignificant island was something far more valuable, a perfect hideout. Unlike the larger colonies where governors ruled with iron fists and European powers waged endless battles for supremacy, St. Barts had no real military presence, no great plantations guarded by fleets of warships. It was a place forgotten by the empires, and in that obscurity, it found its purpose. By the mid-1600s, the island had become a frequent stop for buccaneers, those rogue sailors and outlaws who waged war against Spain with a ferocity unmatched by any European army. These men, many of whom were former sailors, criminals, or adventurers, had been drawn to the Caribbean by the promise of wealth. They attacked Spanish treasure fleets, raided coastal settlements, and carved out their own empires in the lawless corners of the New World. St. Barts offered them shelter. Its hidden coves and rugged cliffs provided perfect natural defenses, while its close proximity to trade routes made it an ideal staging ground for raids. Here, pirates could rest, repair their ships, and divide their spoils without fear of the gallows. And so, as European empires fought for dominance, St. Barts became a kingdom of the damned, a place where those cast out by society could live free, if only for a while. The Golden Age of Buccaneers, 1650s–1680s. The rise of St. Barts as a pirate refuge coincided with the Golden Age of Buccaneers, a period when the Caribbean became a battlefield not just between European nations, but between civilization and lawlessness itself. The buccaneers of this era were not mere thieves. They were organized, disciplined, and often employed by European nations as privateers, mercenaries of the sea, sanctioned to attack enemy ships under the guise of national loyalty. France, England, and the Netherlands, locked in an endless struggle against Spain, saw the buccaneers as a necessary evil. They armed them, financed their raids, and, when convenient, turned a blind eye to their crimes. From their strongholds in Tortuga, Port Royal, and St. Barts, these men struck at the heart of the Spanish Empire. They plundered galleons filled with gold and silver from the mines of South America. They sacked cities, leaving behind trails of fire and blood. They ruled the seas through fear and cunning, their names whispered in terror by those who crossed their path. St. Barts, though smaller than these infamous pirate havens, played its part in the great theater of the buccaneers. It was here that ships were repaired, where stolen goods were traded, and where deals were made in the flickering candlelight of hidden taverns. Many of the most feared buccaneers of the era are believed to have passed through St. Barts at some point in their careers. François Ellolonais, Henry Morgan, and Jean David Nau, also known as François the Cruel, men whose names would become legend, may have found safe harbor among its rocky shores. For a time, St. Barts thrived in the shadows, its people living in uneasy harmony with the rogues who called the island home. But the age of the buccaneers could not last forever. The decline of the buccaneers, 1690s–1700s. By the late 1600s, the European powers had begun to tighten their grip on the Caribbean, no longer willing to tolerate the chaos they had once encouraged. The buccaneers, once useful pawns in the struggle against Spain, had outlived their usefulness. The great empires, now more secure in their holdings, turned against them. England and France, once the greatest supporters of privateering, began to crack down on piracy. Treaties were signed, naval forces were strengthened, and governors were ordered to hunt down the very men they had once armed. The once lawless cities of the Caribbean, Tortuga, Port Royal, Nassau, were slowly brought to heel. Pirate strongholds were burned, ships were hunted, and the noose became the final reward for many who had lived by the sword. St. Bart's, too, felt the changing tide. With the rise of European military presence in the Caribbean, the island could no longer serve as a refuge for pirates without consequence. By the early 1700s, the great buccaneers had vanished from its shores. Some were captured, some fled, and many met their end at the gallows or in the unforgiving depths of the sea. But though the age of the buccaneers had come to an end, piracy was not dead. It had simply changed. The new breed of pirates, 1700s. With the buccaneers gone, a new kind of pirate emerged, a breed even more ruthless, even more daring. These were the true outlaws of the sea, men who bowed to no king, no nation, no law. They sailed under the black flag not as privateers, but as rebels against all authority. The 18th century saw the rise of some of the most infamous pirates in history: Edward Teach, Blackbeard, Charles Vane and Bonney, and Calico Jack Rackham. Unlike the buccaneers before them, these pirates had no safe havens. They were hunted by all, and as a result, they became more brutal, more cunning, and more feared than ever before. Though Street Barts no longer served as a major pirate refuge, it was still visited by these outlaws, who used its hidden coves to evade capture. The island, once a sanctuary for the buccaneers, now became a graveyard for those who were caught in the changing tides of history. The end of an era. By the mid-1700s, piracy in the Caribbean was all but extinct. The great fleets of Europe now ruled the seas, and any pirate foolish enough to test their might was swiftly hunted down. St. Bart's, once a place of lawlessness and adventure, found itself at a crossroads. The island, once ignored, then feared, would now be drawn into the world of empires in a way it had never been before. The golden age of piracy had ended, and a new age was about to begin. Chapter 4. France lays its claim, 1648 to 1763. The winds of change swept over the Caribbean as the 17th century waned, carrying with them the ambitions of empires and the fate of islands caught in their struggle. St. Bart's, once a forgotten outcrop, then a haven for buccaneers, had now become a prize in the game of colonial expansion. The time of pirates was fading, and the great European powers, France, England, Spain, and the Netherlands, turned their eyes toward claiming and fortifying every inch of land that could serve their strategic or economic interests. No longer just a sanctuary for outlaws, St. Bart's was about to become a French possession, one that would bear the scars of conflict, colonization, and survival. A battle for the Caribbean, France and the West Indies, 1648-1660s. In the mid-1600s, the Caribbean was a turbulent battlefield where European nations fought for dominance. Spain, which had once ruled almost unchallenged, found itself beset on all sides as France, England, and the Netherlands carved up its territories. The Treaty of Westphalia in 1648, which ended the brutal 30 Years' War in Europe, also signified a shift in the Caribbean. While Spain retained its powerful holdings in Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the mainland territories, its grip on the Lesser Antilles was loosening. That same year, 1648, France and the Netherlands brokered an agreement to share the neighboring island of St. Martin, a decision that signaled France's growing interest in solidifying its presence in the region. It was during this period of expansion that France's gaze fell upon Street Barts. Unlike Guadeloupe or Martinique, St. Barts held no promise of vast sugarcane plantations or bountiful resources. Yet, its strategic position made it desirable. It was a natural waypoint for ships, a potential defensive outpost, and a place from which France could exert further control over nearby waters. In 1651, the island was officially ceded to the Knights of Malta, a Catholic military order under French influence. This move was largely symbolic, as the island remained sparsely populated, its harsh landscape discouraging large-scale settlement. The Knights of Malta, more focused on European religious and military affairs, made little effort to develop Street Barts. It would take another two decades before France moved to truly claim the island for itself. The first French settlers, a harsh beginning, 1670s-1690s. By the 1670s, France had firmly established its Caribbean empire, with thriving colonies in Saint-Domingue, modern-day Haiti, Guadeloupe, and Martinique. Yet, St. Bart's remained an afterthought, a land too rugged, too dry, too small to support the booming sugar economy that fueled the colonial machine. Despite these challenges, a small band of French settlers from Normandy and Brittany arrived in the late 17th century. They were not wealthy plantation owners, but fishermen, craftsmen, and farmers, seeking opportunity in a place few others desired. Life was brutal. The land, though scenic, was rocky and barren, making large-scale farming impossible. The settlers attempted to cultivate cassava, maize, and tobacco, but the yields were meager. Freshwater was scarce, forcing inhabitants to collect rainwater and rely on underground wells that often ran dry. And then there was the constant threat of disaster. Hurricanes tore through the island, reducing homes to splinters. Fires, sparked by dry conditions and relentless winds, swept through settlements. Disease, carried by insects and the constant movement of sailors, claimed lives at an unforgiving pace. Yet, despite these hardships, the French settlers endured. They built stone houses along the coastline, learning to live in harmony with the rugged landscape. They harvested salt from natural ponds, fished the surrounding waters, and engaged in small-scale trade with St. Kitts and St. Martin. By the turn of the 18th century, St. Bart's had become a functional, if fragile, outpost of the French Caribbean. But it would not remain undisturbed for long. The War of the Spanish Succession and the British Raid, 1701 to 1714. The 18th century ushered in a new age of global conflict, and the Caribbean, so rich in trade and strategic ports, was caught in the crossfire. One of the most significant wars of the era, the War of the Spanish Succession, 1701 to 1714, was fought over which European ruler would control Spain's vast empire following the death of the childless King Charles II. Though primarily a European conflict, the war spilled into the Caribbean, where French and British forces battled for dominance. With Street Barts now under French control, it became a target for British privateers, who prowled the seas in search of easy prey. In 1703, a British force raided Street Barts, looting the small settlements and burning several homes. Unlike the larger French colonies, St. Barts had no forts, no standing army, only a handful of settlers who could do little against a well-armed force. The island was briefly abandoned as survivors fled to nearby St. Martin and St. Kitts. When the war ended in 1714, France retained control of St. Barts, but the attack had left scars. The settlement had to be rebuilt, and once again, the islanders struggled to survive in an environment that offered little in the way of riches. The rise of salt and smuggling, 1720s–1760s. By the mid-1700s, St. Barts had found a new economic purpose, salt production and smuggling. The island's natural salt flats, once overlooked, became a valuable resource as the demand for salt grew in the Caribbean and Europe. Salt was essential for preserving fish and meat, making it a sought-after commodity among sailors and merchants. At the same time, the island became a hub for illegal trade. Smugglers and traders, evading heavy taxes imposed by colonial authorities, used Street Barts as a waypoint for moving goods, rum, tobacco, sugar, and textiles, between European colonies and merchant ships. Unlike the heavily regulated ports of Martinique or Guadeloupe, St. Barts offered freedom from strict oversight, making it attractive to traders looking to avoid taxation. While the French authorities turned a blind eye, St. Barts became known as a place where gold and goods could change hands with few questions asked. This smuggling economy, though small in scale, helped sustain the island, ensuring its survival even as more powerful colonies flourished. The Treaty of Paris, 1763, a new chapter begins. By 1763, the world had changed yet again. The Seven Years' War, 1756 to 1763, had reshaped the balance of power in the Caribbean. This global conflict, often called the First World War, saw France, Spain, and Britain battling across continents, from North America to India, to the waters of the Caribbean. The war ended with the Treaty of Paris in 1763, a document that redrew the map of the Caribbean. France lost some of its most valuable colonies, including Canada and parts of Louisiana, but retained its Caribbean strongholds. St. Barts, largely untouched by the war, remained under French control. But the island's role was about to change once more. Just two decades later, in 1784, something unprecedented would happen. France would sell Street Barts to Sweden. And with that sale, the island would enter a new era, one that would transform it into an unlikely Scandinavian outpost in the heart of the Caribbean. St. Barts was about to become Swedish.